Hey, book lovers, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you may want to listen up because we've got a couple of new things to tell you about Libro.fm. And if you're new here, we want you to know that Libro.fm is the best place to buy your audiobooks because it allows you to buy from your favorite local and independent bookstore. You can choose from more than 150,000 audiobook titles and get recommendations from booksellers around the country, all for the same price as that other company. You know which one I'm talking about. Except with Libro.fm, you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. And now, just in time for the holidays, we wanted to let you know that you can also give audiobook memberships to the book lovers in your life. They come in 3, 6, and 12-month durations. Recipients will receive all of their audiobook credits up front, so no waiting each month for a new book. And they will also receive 30% off all additional purchases during the course of their membership. You can check out the link in our show notes for this deal. And as always, listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get 2 months for the price of one when they use our new promo code, BookstorePod, all one word. That's a new promo code. Don't use the old one. At checkout at Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. With each listen, take pride in knowing you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Corinne. Just some news up top. We had a poll for our third book of May, since May is a three-book month. And we did that on Patreon. And our Patreon has decided that we will be reading Song of Solomon by Toni Morrison, which won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Fiction in 1977. So it stays on trend with our book challenge prompt for the month, which is to read books that were given awards. So that's next time. You can get it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
Okay.
I guess that's about it. But this week, we read Becca's pick. So
I picked Celestial Bodies by Joca Alharty. It was published in English in the U.S. by Catapult in 2019. This is translated from the Arabic by Marilyn Booth. It was first published in Oman in 2010. And the reason I picked it is because it won the International Booker Prize in 2019. Alharty is actually the first Omani woman to have a novel translated into English. And Celestial Bodies is the first novel translated from Arabic to win the International Booker. So lots of firsts. And I did look up just like a few things about her. She's a professor at a university in Oman. And according to her Wikipedia, she has actually written and published 3 short story collections, 3 children's books, and 3 novels. And a second novel of hers called Bitter Orange was published in English last year. So it's fun to see that, like, she won this prize and now we're getting more access to her work.
I think I also saw that. I wonder if it was published in the UK last year. I think it's forthcoming right now from Catapult as well. I follow them on Goodreads and they just had it just popped up there. So you should be able to get that in the US soon.
Yeah, we kind of talk about how as much as we picked, pick a prize-winning book for this month, sometimes we do kind of drag awards, but they do good things sometimes. And a big good thing that they do is introducing people to translated work that we might not normally get access to. So,
right.
Okay, so most of this novel, it's centered around the village of Al Awafi and the city of Muscat in Oman. I do want to note, I did look up the pronunciation of these things, and I know you listened to it.
Uh-huh.
I just have trouble. I have a very strong accent, Michigan accent. So sometimes I say words in my head and they don't come out. So I do want to apologize for my mispronunciations, as I'm sure there will be many. But I am trying. I really am.
I will say that the audiobook narrator was English, as in like British English. And so I don't know if the way that this person pronounced it is the way that everybody pronounces these things. I think she pronounced the capital city as Muscat.
Okay.
But I don't know, because I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say it before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I must have. I listened to NPR an awful lot. Somebody must have been reporting from Muscat or at some point in all of that time. But who knows?
Yeah.
Not who knows. Somebody knows. It's just not me.
Yes. And yeah, it can be hard too, because obviously Arabic has a different alphabet and like writing style.
Yes,
so it's
absolutely.
Like has to be like transliterated, like each letter.
Yeah.
And I think generally when they do that, it does kind of keep like a phonetic similarity. You know what I mean? It's not like, sorry to say this, but like Polish, which is like, it's the same alphabet as English, but it's very different sounds for the letters.
Yeah, I was also going to say, but then you have to like work in the fact that we've got these like nasally Midwestern accents.
Yes. So, anyway,
so it's many steps removed.
So we are introduced to three sisters in the novel, Maya, Asma, Klawa, this is the one that I had, for some reason in my head, I couldn't stop saying Klawa, and it's Kaula?
Kaula. The book made it sound like Haula. So Haula. I don't know if the K is like incredibly soft or what. So,
yes. Yeah. That is probably true. That's also a feature in many languages, but not English, is that sort of like sound.
Yes, because when I picked up the book and I saw it was spelled with a K, I was like, never would have guessed.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
Haula. And then Maya's husband, Abdallah. Abdallah's family servant, Zarifa. The sister's mother, Salima. And their father, Azan. There's various other people in there as well. We mentioned already at the top, there is a family tree at the beginning of the book that I found very, very helpful to see who was who and who was in the same generation as who as well. Each chapter is from the perspective of a different person. And through that, we learn about their past and about, you know, what happens in the future as well. One thing that I wanted to bring up right away, that you listened to the audio, I read a physical copy. Abdallah's chapters are actually in a different font.
Yes, I did see that too when I was flipping through the book.
Do you have any idea? Like, do you have any theories as to why?
Well, okay, so his chapters are told in first person, whereas all of the other ones mostly are like third person. Right? So is it third person? Yeah. But it's just like, it's more or less like that person's perspective. It's just not told in their voice. So I don't know. I wonder if it's just that, like, you know, because we're hearing his voice specifically and not like an omniscient narrator voice.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Do you have a thought about it?
The only thing I could think is he's the only one who is not from that family, like he married into the sister's family. But I think it's most likely a combination of all of them.
But also there's chapters from like Sarifa's point of view
true.
And stuff.
That's
so.
Right. Yeah. And he's not the only male either.
Right.
So I don't know. I think, I mean, I would say the fact that it's first person is probably the best theory. But I don't know why he was chosen to be first person.
I don't either. I thought that was interesting because he is, I think, the least interesting person.
Really?
So, kind of.
That
I mean, like,
is interesting to me.
I just like, I don't know. I think that the other people around him were interesting. So like when you hear his chapters and you're hearing about like his memories of Zarifa, like that to me is interesting. But like himself, I wasn't all that, you know, like interested in what he had to say about like his life particularly. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's okay. That's your opinion. I think, and I think maybe for me, it was because we got so much of his actual thoughts more than anybody else's.
Right.
And I think his perspective was just interesting because, what do I want to say? I think in a lot of popular media that features Muslims, when we have a Muslim man who is in arranged marriage with a woman who doesn't really necessarily love him. The popular media tends to portray that male as very, like, controlling, you know what I mean? Very yeah. conservative. And I found it really fascinating to get a picture of this guy who he did love Maya.
Yeah.
Like, they met because he saw her sewing and he wanted to marry her. And because his father is really rich and connected, Merchant Suleiman, it was decided that it was a good match. And so Abdallah and Maya get married, but she's not really that into it.
I would say she's, like, literally depressed because yeah. for a while she stopped speaking. And then, like, a while she's like, life is actually better if I'm just asleep all the time, because then no one talks to me and I don't have to listen to anybody. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess with him, it was just interesting to read somebody who's sort of grappling with, you know, what did my father build for me? And, like, what do I deserve this? And, you know, what have other people sacrificed to give this to me? Like, the fact that his family had slaves.
Yeah.
Up until slavery was abolished. But then a lot of them still stayed on as servants.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I guess that's what I thought was interesting, is he was just presented in, you know, a different way than what we usually see.
Yeah, no. And well, yeah, I think there is that. I liked learning about, like, his family, and most of that came through, like, him and his remembrances and that sort of thing. So there was that. Mostly I just didn't find him specifically compelling, but yeah, I think you make a good point about how he's not, like, the stereotypical version of like a Middle Eastern man that we might read about or hear about in these kinds of stories. So that's a good perspective.
And it was something I kind of thought through the whole book. And I don't know, the internet at this point has diluted the meaning of, like, liminal space to mean just, like, a grocery store's parking lot, you know?
Yeah.
But I thought, what I think of as liminal space is, like, the in between of, like, old and new, or, like, I think of, like, a wedding, right? Like a traditional Catholic wedding in 2022. It's, like, very, like, we have all these rituals that have been done for, like, centuries, but mm-hmm. yet why are we doing them? Like, we still are all going into the church and, like, going through all of these motions, even though it's, like, we have cell phones, we've been to space, you know? Right. And I thought of that a lot in this book, because it's, like, again, Abdallah grew up where, you know, his dad had slaves, which is, like, yes. very much feels of a different era. And yet when he has his first daughter, they name her London.
Yeah.
And yeah. they talk about, like, going to get his son goes to get fast food and stuff. And so it just mm-hmm. like that kind of reminded me of that sort of thing where it's like all of these, like, traditional things combined with a very, very modern world.
Yeah, well, and I, granted, take literally everything I say with the biggest heaping of salt, because it's not like I know a whole lot about the Middle East in general, or Oman specifically. So, like, mm-hmm. and the book didn't necessarily go into, like, how oil money, like, really in the last, like, even couple of decades just, like, absolutely transformed, like, those parts of the world. And so I think that is a really interesting thing to look at, is, like, these places where we've got, like, Bedouin and the Bedouin are like nomads, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's also, like, people just starting to get Land Rovers, and there's, like, arms traders and stuff like that. So, like, there's this crazy, incredible influx of money into this part of the world that had, like, so many traditions, cultural traditions, and just very specific ways of life to that part of the world. And then there's an influx of money and goods and stuff that are, like, very Western. And I think that's a really interesting look too into what's going on there. So yeah, I think there's that difference too. It's not just generational differences. It's, like, a whole different economic system kind of moving in and displacing things, which is kind of crazy to think about too.
Yeah, I Oman is not a place where many Americans go. I've known one person who went there and they said it was super nice and it's like totally open to tourists and, you know, things like that. And at the same time, I did look it up and it's still an absolute monarchy. Mm-hmm. So again, those are kind of like the things where, you know, from a very Western perspective, like my perspective, it does seem just strange. You know, it's just not something that I see where it's like, you know, very open to tourists, but yet still has this absolute monarch who's been in power for, you know, decades.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. And again, I don't know that much about the Middle East either. Certainly not about Oman. I just think that it's interesting to read about too and to learn about because I don't know very much about it.
Interestingly, I think it was this week I sent the link to Becca, but there was a New York Times, they've got a kind of like a travel blog, sort of not blog, but like a section on their website where they publish travel photojournalism. And it was a story about a woman who spent some time in Oman. I didn't read it, so I can't speak to whether or not the article that she wrote is, you know, problematic or not. I've come to start questioning like travel blogs in general. So just, you know, be aware of that. But the photos I found really interesting because of not being really familiar with like the geography there. And I always think it's really helpful to get like an idea of what the world looks like, it, like of these books. So maybe we'll link to that in our show notes and you can check out what Oman looks like if you're not familiar. So yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's so interesting because like, of course I have very dumb American ideas about what the Middle East means, right? Just basically what I've been shown in film and like heard about on the news. So yeah, it's always so helpful to get a really specific perspective from a person who has spent their life in the place, right? Because like you could grow up here and think that like nobody is allowed to have an education or something like that, you know, when like London is studying to be a physician and that sort of thing. It's just way more helpful to read these books and realize that like what you've been told about a different part of the world is kind of a fabrication.
Yeah. And it too, I thought of that too with Abdallah and Maya's youngest son, Muhammad, has autism. Mm-hmm. And obviously, autism, anybody around the world can have it, you know? And so, reading about that, it, you know, these parents have the same concerns and worries that you would read about in a New Yorker article about somebody with kids with autism, you know what I mean? So it kind of like it shows how different things are, but also how everything is sort of the same too. Like, you know, every parent does have the same struggles and worries. So
okay, go ahead.
Well, one thing I will say that I struggled with, and it did get better as the book got on, but the writing style is very much, it goes in and out of like present and past.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very without warning, I guess I would say.
Yeah, like one paragraph to the next. They don't even have space between them. Yeah.
And sometimes I did struggle with like, and then by the end of the chapter, maybe we've moved ahead in the future as well. So I think that I had a hard time sometimes like wrapping my head around now, okay, Abdallah's talking to London and how old is London right now? And like,
I think
if I had listened on audio, that would have been really difficult for me. And I guess I thought that was an interesting way to tell the story too.
Yeah, I want to say, and I don't know if this is a good time to bring it up, but like I found it not very satisfying, I guess, like the way that it ends up revealing information, because it feels like a lot of it is stuff that could have been told to you like in the beginning, but then you'd get to like the end of a chapter and this would be like the 15th time you've heard from this person or like, you know, their relationship with this other person. And then all of a sudden it would reveal like a tiny bit of information that like I think is supposed to be revealed as kind of profound, but ultimately to me just felt like you could have told me this a long time ago without like making this confusing like you did. You know what I mean? Because I want to say there was a part where like, I don't, it was revealed. I can't even remember what was revealed, but I think it had to do with Zarifa and Suleiman and like the way that he bought her, or maybe the fact that he had been having a relationship with her for a long time. And it's just kind of like, oh, come on. Like the way that it was, oh, right. Like, to all appearances, dates were what occupied his work days, although his real profits were built on the slave trade. That's Suleiman.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, we get all the way through the book kind of wondering, you know, where his money came from. And it's like, oh, it was actually the slave trade. Goodbye. And then, like, moves on to the next chapter. And yeah. I found the way that that was revealed to be, like, kind of frustrating to me. And not, like, I didn't feel like it paid off. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, too, sometimes things were drawn out for so long, like specifically Haula in her marriage. Mm-hmm. And then it was like resolved so quick at the end. So a quick rundown. Also, we're spoiling this whole book. I hope that's okay. she refuses her first match, who is the brother of who her sister, Ozma, eventually marries. Because she was waiting for her cousin Nasir, who lives in Canada. They had like made a pact when they were kids that they were going to get married. And then Nasir moved away and he eventually comes back and he does marry her, but he goes back to Canada and lives with his girlfriend. And then once in a while comes back, gets Haula pregnant and then leaves again. But that takes it like the lead up to that takes a really long time mm-hmm. to get there. So I guess I would just say, I don't want to like harp on it too much, but Haula's like her whole storyline, I felt the most unsatisfied with.
Yeah.
Because yeah. most of it is just her saying, I'm not going to get married. She's also very like vain. Beautiful. She cares a lot about her appearance, yeah. which is fine. I just wish we would have like gotten a little more insight into why that is. Because yeah. in a way, it felt like each sister had a thing. Like, Haula cared about her appearance, Ozma cared about books, and Maya cared about sewing, and then nothing after she got married.
Right. Yeah. And also, I kind of got sad about Ozma because she... I loved her, like, in the beginning, Maya has had her first daughter. So she's just given birth to London and all the women are gathering together. So like Salima and Zarifa is there and they get a visit from like, I don't know what her name is. Something wife is what she's called.
Who was that? Yeah. Anyway,
she must be, I don't know. She must be the wife of somebody who is important in town, I think I don't know the context of it exactly. But she comes and they're all talking and Asma's kind of just like, why isn't Maya allowed to eat off of this plate or whatever? And they're like, well, she can't because she's unclean right now because she's just had a baby and I assume is bleeding or whatever. The weird religious kind of traditions that exist for that, which I, by saying weird, I mean like there's strange Christian traditions regarding periods and that stuff too. So I'm not trying to call it out specifically as being weird, but, and then, Asma's like, I don't think that's true. She's read so much. She loves reading. And she's like, there's no way that it's true. There's no way it's true. And she goes and she finds in a book that like, you know, the prophet or somebody at some point told his wife that like, he doesn't care about her period, essentially. And mm-hmm. and she's like, I'm going to have to memorize this. And so she memorizes it and she's going to tell that woman the next time she sees her. And I love that kind of thing where somebody's mm-hmm. like, somebody's like, these traditions don't make sense. Why are we doing them? And then like, they're told that there's a reason for it, but then they go and they look and there is not a reason for it. And so I loved that. And then I was sad when she got married to this guy and like, they love poetry and they, you know, they seem to be getting along along actually quite well. And then she's like, actually, all I want to do is have babies. And then she just has 14 babies and never thinks about anything else ever again. Yeah. That bummed me out.
Yeah, it was. I think a lot of it, a lot of the everybody's specific like plot line felt like it was all going to lead to something, and then they didn't really lead to much. I think mm-hmm. of two with like Abdallah and London. So we know that London gets a divorce, but the information about why sort of like slowly trickles out. And it just, again, it's kind of like unsatisfying because you kind of already know what's going to happen before it happens. Like, I'm pretty sure it's said that like London's husband is abusive. And so uh-huh. she asks her father if she can he can help her get a divorce. And he does. But then we keep learning about that story, but there's no real additional information that we're given. We're just sort of like told it again and again.
Well, yeah. And it felt like it didn't ever actually build to anything. And I guess like maybe you could say that's kind of what like abusive relationships are like, because she just she is still kind of obsessed with him and is like convinced that he's the love of her life, but he hurt her and is abusive towards her. And so yeah, it just kind of keeps repeating, which, you know, I don't know, not it feels weird as like the what feels like is supposed to be the point that this book is building toward, when it doesn't actually feel like it's building at all when it comes up, I guess.
Yeah, because I do think that's something that like is really could be explored in a really interesting way, is the fact that like, again, this was a person who she was madly in love with. It wasn't an arranged marriage. Like, she had to like, you know, convince her parents basically that she should be able to marry him. And then he did turn out to be abusive, which I like, because it's, again, turning that stereotype on its head. Usually what we see is an arranged marriage turns out to be abusive. And in this case, it's not. There wasn't enough there for me, I guess. It was interesting because it did kind of show how times are changing, though, because so London is Maya's daughter, and Maya is the daughter of Salima. And Salima, I think I'm remembering her story correctly, she was I believe her father died, and her father's brother took her in, and she had a really horrible time there. And then she finally was allowed to go live with her mother. But then her father's brother again set up an arranged marriage for her that she didn't want to do. And she was forced into it, had to marry Azan. Azan ends up having an affair with a Bedouin woman. So, you know, Salim is like forced into all these things. And then she is with some of her daughters. She like kind of makes Maya get married, but I think Maya's like okay with it. Or I don't know if she really puts up a fight.
Yeah, Maya seems very passive to me. So, yeah.
But so anyway, so just like in that, Salima didn't have a choice, was forced to it. But by the time we get to London, London not only gets to choose her husband, but then she does also get to choose to get a divorce as well. So we can kind of see how, you know, it is progressively getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think the idea of like arranged marriage is like such an interesting topic, especially when you like read about the cases in which it's worked out and you're like, hey, actually, maybe its success rate is roughly as good as like our divorce rates in the U.S., you know, where like most people aren't having an arranged marriage. So, yeah, I always think that's like such an interesting like cultural, not even difference. I just, at any given time, whatever people think about like marriage is sort of an interesting bellwether for like, I don't know. Maybe it's not a bellwether. Maybe it's just interesting idea of like what we think about ourselves. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I One of the other things that I found really kind of an interesting story was Zarifa's relationship with Abdullah's father, the merchant Suleiman, just because I mean, for one thing, modern slavery is just like a topic that I'm kind of unfamiliar with. And I think Oman was like, is one of the last kind of countries to have abolished slavery. I think there may be a couple other countries in that still have either legal slavery or kind of like illicit slavery still occurring. But yeah, I kind of a fascinating story. And I wonder what it was like. It would be really interesting to read more about what happened after, you know, slavery was abolished and people were freed. Was there that kind of struggle for the people who had been enslaved? And like, did they want to stay? Did they leave? Like, what were their options when they were freed? Yeah, I found that really, I don't know, interesting to read about. And I think, a slightly different situation, obviously, because she was in a sexual relationship with her slaver, which, yeah, adds a whole level of like consent issues and stuff too.
I mean, I think one thing is that, you know, we all need more education on the fact that just abolishing something, or like abolishing slavery specifically, doesn't just magically solve the problem. That right. in so many countless cases, enslaved people, like recently freed people, still end up being indebted to the previous person who enslaved them, who now is their employer.
Right.
But they have no real leverage to negotiate.
Yeah.
Because of the position that they're in. They don't have capital, you know, and this person has all of the capital. So I think that was like an interesting thing to read about. And then I do wonder if Zarifa wasn't in a relationship with Suleiman, would she have felt the same
right.
about having loyalty to him? Because I don't know. What did you think? I did think she was in love with but then I don't know, because you're right. Like, what is the consent there, and
right.
what choice did she have? Because she started the relationship, or the relationship started when she was still enslaved.
Yeah, no, and I thought it was interesting when we saw her like grappling with like having been freed or whatever, and her husband wants to leave, and her son wants her to leave, and thinks that she's crazy for staying. And how much of that is necessarily her actually wanting to, and how much of it is like her not being able to fathom an identity outside of it, which, you know, maybe that has something to do with being a woman, being, I think she, what was she? Was she Ethiopian?
I'm not sure if they, did they say exactly?
I think she's from Western Africa,
yeah.
I want to say. So, you know, but maybe being of a different race in the country, like, I don't know. Like, I imagine it's gotta be kind of crazy to have, like, you want to think that, like, freeing a slave, like you said, you want to think that it's, like, going to open a whole world of, like, opportunities and possibilities for a person, right? But, like, the truth is that like it rarely does. And so you wonder how much of it is just like her not being able to fathom like what a life is going to be like when she was never really allowed to imagine a life for herself. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a really complicated situation, and just kind of one that I haven't seen represented before in anything. So interesting to think about and like, yeah, like I said, see represented here.
Yeah, I think there's also like shame too involved in it, you know? I think a lot of times humans, all humans, when we do feel shame, we react with anger. And I think maybe that's what Zarifa was feeling too, because her son is basically saying, you're an idiot for staying here. How could you do this? And that's hard. That's so humiliating. Right. To hear from your son that basically he's saying not only was she like a bad mother, she's just not a stupid person.
Right.
And so I wonder if that too is if she's like has to lean more heavily into her identity as this, you know, servant of this family.
Right. And that maybe that's the only thing that's ever given her meaning, right? Is
yeah.
like she can be good at caring for this person. So that's what she did do.
And yeah,
it's also got to be difficult, too. She raised Abdullah like her own son, like a child. The way that he talks about her is like almost like a mother. But she was literally owned by his father. So, you know, I mean, it would be hard to imagine that, like, yeah, I don't know. Very hard to imagine, like, how complicated those feelings must be.
Yeah,
I don't
well,
know.
Right. Yeah. And she didn't have a choice to develop her identity outside of this family
right.
either. So it's all like, I mean, it's really obviously like very similar to or is an abusive relationship as mm-hmm. well. So I don't know. It's but yeah, it was. I keep saying interesting like a million times in this podcast.
I feel like
can
that's
feel
that
it.
Is what I say every single episode.
And I don't know. So I don't know if I enjoyed reading about it. Like I enjoy sounds like such a weird word to say, but I'm glad that I was able to read her perspective about this. I think it's a very valuable perspective to have. Do you want me? I'll read a little passage.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is Ozma. Is getting married. And so this is just a little bit, I did like one thing that I really liked about it was all the descriptions of things, especially since a lot of the descriptions, I've again, never been to the Middle East, so don't know anything about it. Is it Muscat? Is that how you say it? I already forgot.
Muscat is the way that the Muscat. Audiobook pronounced it, but you know, who knows?
It's a port city, so I don't know. That's anyway, this is just descriptions of things. I really liked how she wrote about stuff. So anyway, this is about all of her dowry. Their outstretched hands competed to turn over and examine the shimmering silk fabric that Maya would make into dish dashes and sirwals, all heavily embroidered for the bride. Salima brought out translucent head wrappings, green cloth embroidered along the edges in gold flowers, and others with sequins sewn into their borders. Though she did her best to resist, at least for a few minutes, Hawla had to reach for the shiny pair of high-heeled sandals. Salima leveled a warning glance at her as she tried them on. Once everyone had had her say about the fabrics, Salima opened the perfume chest. Two bottles of French perfume that Salima had bought because the mother of the groom insisted, even though she would have preferred to put the money into a third vial of pure eau de perfume. And then it just goes on to talk about like the different incense, pure Cambodian aloes wood oil, and the best incense from Salala. I don't know. It's just really interesting to read about all of the necklaces and everything else.
Yeah.
I love reading about, sometimes I just love reading about luxury, and I think probably a lot of people do. That's why we have all these like reality shows of rich people.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is like her dowry wasn't even that much.
Yeah.
So, you know, those things all sound very luxurious, but like, I think the their mother, Salima, was like concerned about whether or not she was actually able to like provide enough of the items that, you know, she thought that were required for the wedding. I also thought that passage or, you know, scene in the book was really interesting because the women were all, you know, they get together and they kind of gossip and they're all kind of very catty, which bummed me out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, that is kind of how women can be sometimes. But about like, you know, now all of the jewelry is gold. And when they got married, it used to be silver, but we had so many more anklets and armlets and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that like those traditions have changed and the fact that like they think that their traditions were better than what the girls want these days, et cetera, which is just, I don't know. It's interesting to think about because I think in our culture too, like there is a little bit of that when people like plan their weddings and they have to like consider what their families want for their weddings. And, you know, like this idea of tradition and you just kind of wonder like, was tradition kind of going away because the girls had more options like available for their lives now so that that's not the only thing that felt important to them anymore, was like following some sort of prescribed rules of like what you're supposed to wear or do for your wedding. I don't know.
Yeah, I did. And I don't know why. I've never thought about this before, because maybe because I've never been married. But, we still sort of have a dowry. It's just both families, like everybody contributes to it. Mm-hmm. When mm-hmm. you make your wedding list. What is right. that called? Gift registry. But then I also thought that, like, at least with the stuff that, like, Maya got, she can resell that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can resell really good quality silks and jewelry. Like, you're not going to be able to resell a silverware set for very much, no. probably, that you no. bought it, that you got from Target.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
Yeah.
What did you think of the ending of the book?
I gotta remember how it ended, because there was like a whole bunch of people in a row.
Yeah, so the very last chapter, I felt like came out of nowhere, but I don't know if that's just because like I hadn't been paying close enough attention or not. It is where, I mean, it is and it isn't, right? Because Abdullah the whole time, one thing we haven't mentioned is that Abdullah is kind of haunted by the memory of his father and the things that his father has done. And then also whether or not his father would approve of what he has done in his life, kind of. So he feels his father's presence often, I think, when he's concerned about judgment. And so then he's at the shoreline. He's at the shore, and they're parked, and he's with Muhammad, and he kind of like hallucinates a bunch, mm-hmm. it seems. And then he imagines, I guess, Muhammad as a boy, like a young boy, even though I assume he's a young man, really, at this point in time. And he carries him out into the sea, and then he slips into the water. And then he says, "When I opened my arms, Muhammad slipped away like a fish, and I came out of the water dry." What does that mean?
Yeah, I thought it was all kind of interesting, because the only real sort of metaphysical stuff we get in the book until that chapter is between Azan, who is the three sisters' dad, and his affair partner.
Yes.
Basically. And so with their kind of thing.
And a little
thing,
bit with Zarifa, because Zarifa takes a kind of like a sacrifice, if you will. She takes a meal to the jinn woman to protect women who have just had babies, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
So it did kind of surprise me a little bit. The only thing, and yes, so that was kind of, that's the thing that was confusing, is you're right. I think Muhammad was like an adult. I don't think that he was actually holding Muhammad and let him like drown. But the only thing I could think is just like, really, because of Muhammad's autism, that Abdallah was like letting go of control. Like, I can't do anything about this. It's
right.
And it's maybe not necessarily his responsibility, you know, like I think maybe with the struggle with his dad, he felt like he had to fix everything. And he was finally realizing that he can't fix everything.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's also pretty aware that I think his wife is not in love with him, obviously. So, yeah, like all of those pressures, I suppose, he's kind of allowing himself to be free of, maybe. Yeah.
But I would have liked a little bit, again, with a lot of these things, like you said, when like the ending of the chapter comes, it's like sometimes I could use a little bit more something. Yeah. And I did feel with that I could have used a little bit more, because, again, like I do like the parts where they discuss Muhammad's autism and, you know, what they can do about it. But I probably could have had like a whole book about it, really.
Yeah.
Just like a family struggling with that. So,
well, I was going to say that this book has so many people that it's like weaving together, and it's only like 240 pages long, that it's kind of crazy that it manages to get any story told in a way. But yeah, so like really almost any part of this could be its own book.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, I mean, as an overall, I'm really glad that we read it. I do have my, you know, things that I didn't necessarily like about it, but I thought it was really good. And
yeah,
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. And I had, because I think I would have struggled on audio, but because I read it physically, I found it probably a lot easier to keep people separate, just because I have much easier time seeing names that are unfamiliar to me than hearing them.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Keeping them straight. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm much more visual with that. I can like tie just the way that the word looks on the page to something in my brain. But hearing it is much more difficult for me, too. But yeah, I mean, I won't say that like that I think that listening to this made it like impossible or anything. I think I would have benefited more from actually reading it just for my perspective and like how I engage with audiobooks. I think it was a book that was a little bit more difficult for me for audio. But at the same time, there was a lot of, here I go, interesting like perspective and just different things represented in this book that are not things that I'm familiar with in any way, which is very interesting and fascinating to me. And I think would, under normal circumstances, keep my interest a lot more than maybe it did, which I think is more or less about the format that the book is written in because of switching back and forth in time so fluently did not work for me listening. But at the same time, I think I managed okay, and I'm happy to have checked this one out. It's been on my TBR since I think it won the International Booker, so glad to have it checked off.
All right, well, thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you'd like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore, or you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
You can find all the ways to contact us, email, social media, phone line at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be Song of Solomon by Toni Morrison. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.